The following program was pre-recorded. On WFAN, it's time for Hello, My Name is Craig, our weekly candid conversation about gambling addiction. Now, here's Craig Carton.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Happy to have the infamous bookie in the Shohei Ohtani scandal, Matthew Boyer. Matt, let's get back into where we left off. So, you know, look, in my experience, I've gambled with, you know, well-known, famous people, powerful people, underground games and things of that nature. For many people that don't know the story of Molly's Game, Molly, a former Canadian world-class skier, you know, won, I think, silver medal at the Olympics, wound up running one of the biggest private poker games first in New York, then in L.A., then decided that she should start charging a VIG for people to play in the game. She got busted, blah, 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 turned it into a movie. And when things like that happen, the well-known, powerful people and celebrities, you know, scatter like rats, you know, on the Titanic. When you got in trouble and things blew up very publicly, I've got to imagine that your phone rang a number of times from well-known people who had gambled with you to make sure that they weren't in harm's way. Am I right on that?
Yeah, it's actually, it's strange you say it. I would say it's more the opposite. I reached out to some of them because my being private about their personal lives and blowing them up per se, was important to me, that they realized that I wasn't going to be, let's call it a rat or somebody who just sells them out. In my book, I describe some very powerful, just like you said, celebrities and athletes, but I don't mention their names for a reason. And maybe that'll damage my book as far as, you know, people want to hear these names.
Right.
And, you know, and of course I'm in a position with five kids and owing the government over $9 million in taxes and $1.6 in restitution and no longer making $1 million a month. I need to make money. But there comes a point in your life where, you know, you just have to be a person first and have some humanity. So I'm not selling everybody out. But yes, I got some of those phone calls, but I think it was more me reaching out to them. And most of them want nothing to do with talking to me, which
right.
I understand.
Oh, no, dump you like a bad habit because now you go into protection mode. And to be fair, those people did nothing wrong. You provided a service. They took you up on the service. So it's not like they should, you know, now be embarrassed publicly that they happen to play cards or, you know, bet on a ball game through your services. But I'm sure you have a lot of panicky people out there. Did the government ask you for those names?
You know, it's funny, they did not, and I'll tell you why. When I first got in trouble, the government's eyes were not on my business, per se. Of course, they were here. I had 29 FBI agents at my home, you know, 8 red dots on my chest when I was putting my son in the car, and raided my home for about 8 hours and took everything out of it. But their target was the casinos, and in particular, Resorts World. And there was a lot of money laundering and things that were going on through the casinos. And that's kind of their target of the investigation. They didn't even know about Shohei Ohtani when they came to my home.
They came to you because you were moving significant amounts of money through casinos without any background check of how is this guy earning this type of money that he's now funneling through the casinos, yeah?
Yeah, pretty much. The casinos knew I was a bookmaker. They looked the other way, and that's a no-no with the government's eyes.
Right. There's an old thing, it's maybe not that old, with casinos, and it's a line that they all have to live by now. And I don't think this was the case even, you know, 10 years ago. Know who your customer is. And by that, yep. I mean, you know, if you walk in, and I've done this, $1 million in cash in a bag to go play blackjack, well, how did that guy get $1 million in cash? And is he just laundering it? Because, you know, you go play for an hour, have a couple drinks, walk out with their $1 million in cash, and it's clean and you're all good. So that's why they started to look into you, because you became a Vegas whale and you're walking in or wiring in obscene amounts of money. And whatever you reported as your job didn't equate to the types of funds you had available to gamble with. So that's why they came after you.
You're exactly correct. You know, KYC, know your customer, you got the SARS. CTRs, all these things are implemented from the government to avoid money laundering and all kinds of things that are going on through casinos, which have been diminished drastically because of this. But if you go back, you said it best, 10 years ago,
yep.
I used to be able to send wire transfers from other people to the cage under my name. Now that you couldn't even blink, I sent a wire transfer to Monte Carlo from my trust account, and it got for $1 million and got sent back right when before I got in trouble.
Right.
So the banks and all the government has put so much, you know, power into watching the casinos that they can no longer get away with any of that.
Look, it changed, right? I used to be able to send money. It could be from any one of five business accounts, but for my name personally. And then it came down to you can't do that. You can't even send it from a business account. All money transferred into casinos domestically have to come through a personal account. And, you know, they're vetting it because the government's looking at them, you know, for tax reasons and fraud and other things like that. I'm just, you know, obviously we could talk forever and ever and ever and share stories and stories and stories. You're about $10.5 million in arrears whenever you're done serving whatever the sentence is ultimately going to be. Is there a plan to, well, I guess, A, pay that back, but B, you have spent your entire adult lifehood with means, with significant amounts of money. What's the plan to live life with a lot less money?
Well, a lot less money short term. I'm the underdog, Craig, and I will come back bigger and stronger. I know that sounds wild for a 50-year-old man to say he's going to go make $20 million plus dollars a year, but I will. You know, I wrote a book. It's called Recalibrate. Immediately when I got in trouble, instead of sulking and whining and, you know, blaming others, I looked in the mirror and looked at myself and said, look, you've had an amazing life. You've made a lot of money, probably over $100 million over your lifetime. You've done things that rock stars and celebrities have never even thought of. And guess what? You got a bump in the road, and now you got to deal with it. How am I going to do that? Well, clearly right now I'm selling turf to provide just to pay my mortgage and get by. I just took a $1.5 million loan against my property to pay restitution, and I'm paying that in the next 3 weeks. So that restitution will be paid in full to show the judge that I take this very serious. And yes, I committed crimes, and I'm owning them. And I'm also teaching my children. I have five beautiful kids. I've been honest with them from day one. They've known I was a bookmaker since they've been born. And I was in the gray area. And if you play in the gray area, you're going to dance with the devil. You're gonna do some time or crime. And in my case, it could be time. We'll see. That being said, the minute I'm out of prison or house arrest or whatever happens to me, I'll be on stages giving speeches, you know, deterring people from gambling. Or if they do gamble, teaching them how to do it better, learning from my mistakes, and really just giving back to the community and the world. And I believe that my book, which is now turning into, I just signed a deal for a documentary, and I do believe you'll see a Wolf of Wall Street movie on my life. I feel very strongly that'll happen. And then from there, I think you'll see me really move forward in my life. Now, here's the best part of all this. By being raided by the FBI and turning my, you know, my shoulder to, let's call it the gray area side of my life, I could never look over my shoulder anymore and worry about, is my door getting busted down? Sure. I've been raided twice by the FBI. It's a traumatic experience. I wish that upon nobody, but it's made me who I am today. And I'm excited to move on to my next chapter. I'm rounding second base. I got a long way to go. I got a lot of things to live for and a lot of great times in front of me.
Matthew, let's take a quick break on that. We'll continue with this amazing story right after this on Hello, My Name is Craig.
Back to more of Hello, My Name is Craig on The Fan with your host, Craig Carton.
Welcome back to Hello, My Name is Craig. Matthew Boyer joins us. Walk me through with as much specificity as you can the day you got raided.
That was tough. I was 9:30 in the morning. I was walking out of my house with my partner and black belt professor in my jiu-jitsu studio who loves my son. My son's 3 years old. And we're going to take him to the park. Give my wife a break. And I was putting him in his car seat. Like I said, it's 9:30. I hear FBI freeze. I look to my left. I have 8 red dots on me, a full tactical team with the, you know, the battle ram, the shields, the whole 9 yards. And they immediately grabbed me and my son. We pulled to the other side of the driveway. They cuffed my professor. And they said, who's in the house? I told them a painter and my wife. So they went in and, of course, broke the door down and grabbed her, cuffed the painter, pulled him out, and they brought the dog in. And that took about 30 minutes to secure the premise. Then they came back out, and they allowed everybody to leave but myself. And I wouldn't talk to them, of course, so no attorney present. And then about 8 hours later, as they took bags of cash, jewelry, casino chips, gold, you know, anything you can imagine, all the purses my wife had, et cetera, I watched them bag it all up, and I said, okay, I guess we'll be dealing with the next steps. And that 8-hour process was like very life-changing because I knew that my life just drastically changed.
Yeah, immediately. Did you have any sense that it was coming or no?
You know, honestly, Craig, they raided me in 2014, and it was a little less traumatic. I had about 14 agents. They just grabbed all the money. It was under $1 million. And I signed it over to them. It was called abandonment form. I didn't even hire an attorney, didn't even speak to an attorney, and they went on their merry way, gave me back my computer and phone about 4 days later, and I was booking that night. So I kind of felt like because I pay taxes, clearly not the right amount, and because I didn't harm or hurt anybody, and I think because I'm a dad and, you know, really just kind of, I can't say it flew under the radar. I definitely didn't do that. But I just felt like they kind of left me alone and were going to. So I didn't suspect this, no. But here's the problem. The bigger you get in this business and the bigger you become on the scale of celebrities and athletes, the more of a target you are. So I definitely had that in the back of my mind.
And before I let you go, in your opinion, right now today, are there professional athletes in this country actively betting through people like you on their own sport?
On their own sport, for sure. I think it's minimal because I think that people are smart enough to see all this, you know, trauma that comes with it. Do I think they are? Yes, sadly. I think it's very low, that percentage. Clearly, I think over 50% of athletes, and I've said this publicly, are betting on sports. I'd say much higher than that. But on their own sport, I think there's probably where a lot of people doing it. And I think that because of what's happened, I'm sure they've made some better decisions. That's just my speculation, and stop doing it.
And without using names, did you ever have active athletes as customers wagering on either A, their own sport, or B, one of their own games? And I ask because we've seen, you know, Jontay Porter, former Raptor, do it, and he's obviously in a world of trouble. A couple other guys, not, you know, household names necessarily, but, you know, there have been a number of guys, NFL guys, you know, like Calvin Ridley, who made wagers on his own team, even though he was on IR when he did it. Have you had guys as customers wagering on either their own sport or their own team?
You know what? Not directly, meaning that I'm aware of. But let me remind you, I had 48 agents across the country. So of my roughly 1,200 clients at my peak, I only dealt with about 250 of them directly. The rest were through agents who, you know, would of course deal with those players, and those players would use, like you said earlier, beards or people that were, you know, doing it. So I could honestly tell you that I don't know of any, but I'm very, very certain that it's happened. I just don't have any proof nor do I want to know, to be honest.
You ever meet Ohtani?
You know, I did in like a batting cage presence, but never like, it's not like we had a conversation. Of course, he doesn't speak great English anyway, but I just been in his presence. So I wouldn't say like I met him as a formal introduction, no.
Got it. How are you going to live life without gambling? Can you do it?
You know, it's funny. My wife has been proud of me. I haven't been, but it's hard. I mean, you know. I imagine my honest opinion is I will gamble again one day. And this is something I wouldn't say in front of my judge. But the reason I think I'll gamble is for one reason only, and that's just to continue the end of my story of the comeback. It's actually not even for the addiction purpose. Don't get me wrong. I have an addiction to it. But what I mean is if I walk into a casino 5 years from now, 3 years from now, and I'm able to bet whatever, $1 million or it doesn't matter, 10,000, it's just the fact that I overcame everything and I'm able to do what I want to do. I just don't like being told you can't do something.
Right. That's the ego back in play though. Right?
It is. It's and like, I'll always have that.
Yeah, like I'll the ego's still alive. It's been knocked down for sure. But it's interesting. You know, I've said something similar in that it's not that I want to go out and gamble right now. I don't. But I hate the fact that people are telling me or, you know, that I'm quote-unquote not allowed to. Now, I've gotten past that. I'm 7 years now almost without gambling. So I've gotten over that, you know, kind of egotistical view of my ability to play blackjack and be really good at it, et cetera. But I get that. I felt that same way earlier in my recovery where I was like, yeah, I'm going to gamble again one day because F everybody. I don't want to live life being told I'm not allowed to do it. And then for me, and I'm just me, you know, 7 years later, you know, knock on wood, I'll never gamble again because I also know If I went to a casino right now and I had $1,000 in my pocket, I can't bet $100 a hand. I know I can't. I'm well aware of the fact that if I went in with $1,000, I'm betting probably 500 on the first hand, 500 on the second hand, and if I win either one of them, I'm betting all of it on the next hand. That's I know I can't do it any less.
I have the same disease and the same issue, so I hope in 7 years from now I'm saying what you're saying.
Yeah, me too, for your sake, I do.
I really do, but you know, I can't lie to myself, and I just got to own it. But the deeper I get into my sobriety of gambling, the easier it's gotten.
And so I would tell you this, if you get to a place, and you know, hopefully we'll continue a relationship beyond this and your sentencing.
I would love that.
If you get to a place where you kind of change your tune on, I do want to gamble again one day, and you commit yourself to not gambling, you would be one of the most powerful speakers coast to coast to kind of warn people about the dangers of gambling from both sides, because you have played the house and you've been the player, and that perspective is really unique and really powerful. And I'm hoping, knock on wood, that one day in the future, you know, you share a stage with me on a college campus or a high school auditorium or, you know, anywhere, and we tell people together about why some of us should never gamble again.
Well, it's a great point. And listen, even though I made the statement I made, the egotistical side of me is definitely still here. I am enjoying the peace. I am enjoying the, you know, sleeping at night, not, right, you know, continuing to run over your brain. And even though you and I both have had these highs, the highest highs, we all know what it's like to win $3 million, $4 million on something in 2 hours.
Yep.
But the lows are just so much darker and lower. So if we ever get that opportunity, I'd be right next to you with a smile.
And what's the thought process? You know, Mitsuhara got 57 months. Have your lawyers given you any kind of inkling what you're possibly looking at sentence-wise?
Yeah, it's basically the lowest tier is probably house arrest, a year, 3 years probation, and the higher tier is 37 months. You know how the sentencing guidelines work,
yep,
but a lot of people don't. But that being said, my cooperation against the casinos is definitely allowing me to minimize my problems, but it's all up to the judge. So we'll see. My attorneys feel like I'm looking at a year and a day or house arrest. It's kind of the feel they get from the whole situation.
Obviously, I wish you the best when it comes to sentencing. No amount of time away, I don't care if it's a camp or anywhere else, is good time. It should never be glamorized. So best of luck with that. And look, I appreciate your candor and coming on. I know a lot of people view you in a certain way, but haven't even talked to you. And I'll ask one more time, just because it's my job to ask. Throughout the entire time that Mitsuhara was wagering with you, there was never an inclination or a nod or a wink where you got the sense that Ohtani was involved, knew, was making the bet, or anything along those lines?
Truly didn't. But again, I didn't have any conversations or even try to dig or pry because, you know, like we said earlier, I didn't really want to know, even though I wanted to know, if that makes sense. And it was one of those situations where you're kind of scared to find out the truth because, you know, either way, it's kind of, it could be bad either way, knowing what's really behind the door.
And of the $326 million that he wagered, what was his net loss over the course of the time he bet with you?
It was $40.2 million.
That was his net loss?
Yeah, which he paid $16.2.
It's a lot of money.
It is a lot of money to anyone. I don't care how rich or successful you are.
And he wasn't even your biggest client at the height of your operation, right?
Well, if you go by volume, he was. I've taken bigger wagers, but yeah, volume, nobody trumps him. I mean, that was bananas.
What's the single biggest wager you remember taking?
You know, I've made, like I said, $4.2 million bet myself, and I've taken a $1 million wager multiple times, but really no bigger than that. That's not true. I took a $2 million wager. That's the biggest I've ever taken, but I don't talk about it. I do in my book. I don't talk about it as actually taking a wager because I was stiffed. The guy lost $10 million to make $2 million on the Golden State Warriors against the Cavs in the 2016 NBA Finals. And he proceeded to not pay me $12 million afterwards. He owed me $2 million going into the bet.
Wow.
Yeah, it was the biggest bet I've ever taken. But as far as a bet I've taken and been paid or paid out, it was $1 million multiple times on Super Bowls.
Tell everybody the name of the book and where they can get it.
Recalibrate. Can't purchase it yet. That won't be available until actually when this is aired. It will be available, but okay. Due to my sentencing, I'm holding that back for obvious reasons. But anyways, Recalibrate. You'll be able to get it, through my website and even through Amazon, et cetera. And my Instagram is at MatthewBoyer5. You can check me out on all social media and, follow me, et cetera. Give me some hope and support. And I want to say to you, Craig, I'm really proud of you. You've come a long way with your journey and overcoming gambling addiction and giving back. And I see that in you. And, I honestly look up to you for that.
Well, I appreciate it. And as you'll learn along the way, I'm blessed to have a very small group of people that care about me and love me despite my faults, who keep me straight. And without that support, I probably wouldn't be alive. I'd certainly be in trouble if I was alive. And you'll find that you have that too. And one of the interesting things about your experience now, having been arrested, your name all over the newspapers and all that kind of jazz, is you learn a valuable life lesson very, very quickly. And the lesson is you understand who's got your back and who doesn't. And there's no doubt you've experienced that people you thought were loyal to you and had your back, scatter and never call you again. And then you'll find that there's people you never even thought of who are truly in your corner and love you and want to be a part of the success story. And you hold on to those people literally like it's the oxygen you breathe. And you'll experience some amazing highs along the way and some depressing lows. But if you stay true to who you think you are at your core, and you only surround yourself moving forward with the people who want the best for you, you can overcome what you're about to deal with. There's no doubt about that.
Great advice. Everything you said, I've already experienced times 10, and I'm sure it's going to continue to be more and more. And I want to say to you, you are a person that when this first happened to me, you reached out and we had a conversation. We never met, never spoke, and we were introduced by a good friend of ours, Justin Paperny.
Yep.
And you were there for me and, truly knew nothing about me. So I, again, want to thank you and give you kudos for just giving back.
Yeah, you'll do the same. You'll do the same because,
absolutely.
There's a even smaller group of us who are quote-unquote public figures or whose story played out very publicly who can relate to one another in that regard.
Right.
And like you said, I didn't know a damn thing about you. I knew that our friend Justin Paperny, who was a prison consultant, was representing you and helping you with your journey now towards your potential incarceration. And I said, look, I know the story. I didn't know who you were. I knew about, the Mitsuhara part of it. And I get great joy, frankly, and satisfaction of being able to use my story to help other people like me. And, we've become friendly over the last year or so, and I truly wish you the best. I appreciate the fact that you own what you've done. That's a big part of this. And that you're honest about it, because you're never going to get healthy or get the help you need until you own what you've done and you're honest about it. And my fingers are crossed for your sentencing, and we'll certainly stay in touch. Thanks.
Thank you so much for your time, and I really appreciate the friendship.
Be well. Best to you. Take care.
Take care, my friend.
Bye-bye. Matthew Boyer, everybody, and thank you so much for listening to Hello, My Name is Craig.